Some people call jazz musician John Santos the Latin Renaissance man. Based out of San Francisco, Santos is one of the world's leading exponents of Afro-Latin music and the leader of John Santos and Machete. Santos has numerous albums to his name and has recorded with superstars like Dizzy Gillespie and Tito Puente. Santos told Steve Paulson that American jazz can be traced back to the Latin roots that found their way to New Orleans.
One, two, diggy, diggy, do.
The first thing is just to look at the history of the Caribbean, that all the major ports of the Caribbean, including New Orleans, are connected for hundreds of years, economically, socially, culturally, politically. So as a result of that, there's always been movement between all those ports, which is why the Caribbean has this certain character that it has, which is a Creole place. And if you go to any of those major ports, you find the similarities. You see this Creoleness in the food, in the way that people look, in the music, in the rhythm. And the rhythm is an important one in New Orleans, because New Orleans carries a certain feel in their music that in the Caribbean is identified as clave. But most people, you know, relate clave with Cuban music and with Latin American dance music traditions. But it's really a pan-Caribbean phenomenon, and it's very present in New Orleans, although it's not talked about that much and it's not noticed because the clave is played on European instruments in the States, whereas it's played on African-derived instruments in the Caribbean. But it's there. If you listen to the second line music in the Mardi Gras, they have that accent, which is very easy to hear the clave. You know, they play that.
What about if you go back to some of those old New Orleans jazz musicians, King Oliver or Louis Armstrong? Do you hear it there?
Most certainly. They were very in tune with what was going on in the Caribbean, because not only did they travel in the Caribbean, but they also were exposed to a lot of Caribbean musicians who came to New Orleans to play, especially in the post-slavery period, going from toward the end of the 19th century and into the 20th. You had this incredible migration, in particular black migration into the urban areas, as well as a migration following seasonal work throughout the Caribbean of cutting cane and harvesting coffee and what have you. So you end up with people from all over the islands going to the various places for this seasonal work. So they were exposed to musicians from all over. And Louis Armstrong, one of his biggest and earliest hits was The Peanut Vendor, which is a Cuban song, El Manicero. Jelly Roll Morton, of course, a great jazz pioneer, piano player from New Orleans, always said that if it didn't have that Spanish tinge, what he described as a Spanish tinge, which is a syncopated rhythmic feel in the left hand when you play piano, then it wasn't jazz. So it's like one and two and three and four and one and two. And so it has that syncopation. And that's what they would put in the left hand, that one and two and three and four, one and two and three. And that is the Latin flavor that really identifies a lot of New Orleans music.
Now, I'm somewhat familiar with the Cuban roots of jazz, but I don't tend to think of Puerto Rican music as jazz.
Well, you know, again, the connections, the historical connections are the easiest way to see it, because the Puerto Rican community is the first Latin community in New York City. And where were they put? They were put in Harlem. The first community, the barrio in New York, is in Harlem. So these Puerto Ricans who were black and of color mostly, who lived in Harlem, you know, experienced, they were in the middle of the whole Harlem Renaissance, and they saw and they participated in that thing that was going on in the arts there in black music. Also, Puerto Rican musicians were very much in demand, because the band leaders, the black band leaders of the day, sometimes would have trouble finding musicians, because traditionally black musicians did not have too much access to formal training in this country in comparison to a place like Puerto Rico, where in Puerto Rico they have what's called bandas municipales, which are municipal bands or orchestras. Every little town has one. So if you show a little promise as a kid, you go to these places, they provide you with music lessons and an instrument. And so a lot of the musicians went to New York City were very, very highly trained musicians who could play, you know, Sousa marches and stuff from the military tradition, the European classical repertoire that they learn in these bands, but also typical Caribbean music, which is mostly in Puerto Rican in this case, but that's also very akin to Cuban music. So the Puerto Rican connection is one that, again, is kind of invisible, but it's there from the, you know, early on.
It is true that I think when you tend to think about Latin American influences on jazz, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is bossa nova, but it's sort of that earlier history. And it was very prevalent in the jazz world especially, say, in the 1930s and 40s, wasn't it?
Certainly. I think the important thing is to look at the common roots, because the Latin music, the Afro-Latin Caribbean music and jazz have the same roots. So they're really branches, you know, of the same tree. And when they come back together, it's not like a novel or a new thing. It's very logical that they work together. You know, if we look at Mario Balsa, who came in 1930 to New York City, and within 2 or 3 years, he was the musical director of the Chick Webb Orchestra. And they were playing straight-ahead jazz of the day, swing, and one of the premier orchestras, and the musical director was a Cuban. You know, he brought in Dizzy Gillespie to that group to sub for him. He brought Dizzy to the Cab Calloway Orchestra. He brought Ella Fitzgerald to the Chick Webb Orchestra. You know, a seminal figure. And there's a lot of cases like that. Juan Tisol, also a trombonist from Puerto Rico, who was a big part of the Duke Ellington Orchestra and wrote Caravan and wrote some of the hits that Duke had that was coming from that side. And there's so many examples of that.
Duke Ellington's tune. What were you trying to do there?
Yeah, we have, I think, an interesting arrangement there. Wayne Wallace, who is a wonderful trombonist himself and composer and arranger, made that arrangement for us, adapted it for us, and it's, you know, it's just a tribute to that tradition of the Puerto Rican, the Caribbean roots of jazz.
Talked about some of the key figures in the history of jazz and how they incorporated Latin rhythms into their music. One was Dizzy Gillespie, and he hired, for instance, a drummer who has since become legendary, Chano Pozo. Tell me about him.
Yeah, well, Chano ties into this in so many ways. Chano was introduced to Dizzy by Mario Balsa, so that name comes up again. And Chano Pozo was a person who really, in a very short time, revolutionized what was going on with, you know, just bringing authentic, real, traditional roots of Afro-Cuban rhythm into jazz.
Well, and part of the fascination with him is his personal story. Apparently, he was a pretty tough guy.
Yeah, he was a character with a reputation coming from the ghetto, so to speak, in Havana. But was already very well known as a composer, choreographer, because he worked with the carnival groups and did choreography for them in Havana, and a drummer and vocalist. And he had several hits already when he came to New York and was, you know, seeking to further his career. And hooking up with Dizzy turned out to be phenomenal. In that 1 year and a half that he was with Dizzy's orchestra, they did a lot of touring. They toured throughout the states in the South and the West Coast. They toured in Europe. They made several recordings. And they really, you know, put a big shot in the arm there. That's a big milestone. A lot of people consider that to be the beginning of the marriage of Cuban and jazz. I don't quite look at it that way. I think it goes back a lot further than that, but that's certainly a huge milestone. And Dizzy always just the visionary up till his death. You know, I had the great honor of being able to record and play with Dizzy, and he just up to the end just, you know, sounded great on his horn and was always just very innovative and always saw Latin America and Latin music as a frontier of jazz, as a very important part of it. And one of the last great things he did, of course, was to form that United Nations Orchestra made up of musicians from all over Latin America. And he saw that as appropriate for jazz. That's what it was about. You know, a lot of purists, you know, tend to not want to go that way. And, you know, I've heard some sentiment of, you know, well, this is like the only thing that's really ours, and they feel like it might be being appropriated. But I think that's a result of this kind of conquer and divide mentality that has been put upon us all. We've been denied, I think, the truth about, you know, where some of these roots of jazz come from.
John Santos is one of the world's leading exponents of Afro-Latin music and the leader of John Santos and Machete. This is their tune, El Africano.